This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You are listening to a special edition iFanboy podcast on Batman Year One.
There's talk on the street, it sounds so familiar. Great expectations, everybody's watching you. People you meet, they all seem to know you.
Hello, welcome to a special edition iFanboy podcast on Batman Year One. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And Ryan Hopp.
Howdy.
We three are from iFanboy.com. Normally we talk about comics, but we'd like to get together and talk about these DC Universe original animated movies that they put out twice a year at this point. And this is our usual crew minus Chris Neesman, who couldn't make it. He's off curling.
Not a euphemism.
He's actually off curling, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know who's. I think he's got the better end of the deal right now. So, not that I don't like talking to you guys, but I think I'd like to be curling. Anyway, this is the latest for release in the Bruce Timm company that does all these films. There's been 11 or 12 of them. I've lost track. And this was the highly anticipated Batman Year One adaptation. For many people, Batman Year One is the best Batman story of all time, written by Frank Miller, drawn by David Mazzucchelli. And it's been around for over 20 years and stood the test of time as the definitive Batman origin story. And when they announced they were going to animate it, I was very excited and also, you know, worried, because anytime they take such a classic and iconic story, you wonder how it's going to translate. Funnily enough, I thought this was the most faithful adaptation we've had so far of all of these films. This was pretty much. There was not a lot left out, not a lot added. The art looked just like the book. This was the most – if you take the original mission statement of we want to adapt these stories with the original art style, this was probably the most successful in terms of technical achievement of all of the films.
Yeah, I'd say if you thought that All-Star Superman was pretty close minus a few subtractions because they couldn't fit all of the little stories in, all of the episodes from All-Star mm-hmm. Superman, this is – even closer to its source material, both visually and just like script wise, it's pretty much all there. I mean, it's been a while since I read the original comics, but it feels pretty damn close. I even write down to the calendar listings, you know, every mm-hmm. and it's kind of weird seeing that in a like an hour long movie. It kind of breezes along. With the comic, it's sort of your more used to that kind of thing, and it's not so jarring, but yeah, you do get to see, you know, it starts in January, right, and then just goes through a calendar year,
yeah,
basically.
But yeah, every few minutes you get a little caption of, or sometimes every few seconds you get a caption of it. Now it's June 6th, it's August, you know, 14th, whatever.
It took me a little bit of time to get used to that device, because like you said, it's something we're used to in comics, but in this short and animated film, it's not something you're necessarily anticipating moving through time that quickly. And I remember thinking at the beginning of the movie how much I was enjoying seeing Gotham in winter and how cool it was that there was like snowdrifts everywhere, and just, I don't know, it added to the mood and the setting a lot for me. And then you know, 10 minutes later, I realized, oh, wait, the snow's gone. We're in March. No, wait, June. Oh, okay. So, all right, we're really doing this.
Time moves quick. What's funny is that this is actually one of the shorter films. It's only like an hour and 4 minutes, I think, or something like that. It's 60, really short.
64 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, and like we said before, they didn't really cut anything out, so it wasn't like they could have added another 7 minutes or however. It wasn't – weren't they 70 minutes originally? So we could have added another 8 minutes to the movie, but there really wasn't much more to add.
Batman Year One's a four-issue series though, right?
Right.
So a lot of these movies are being adapted from longer books. Like New Frontier is a big series, and even World's Finest was 6 issues. So,
and it's just interesting to show you how little there can be in a comic. You know,
yeah.
If you took a straight adaptation, it's not a comic doesn't take up a lot of screen time, which is why they always have to add things to these stories.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because sometimes, you know, like I said, there was maybe it's a few seconds, you know, or like a moment or two between seeing, you know, June something and then, you know, like 2 weeks later. And I'm just like, even though I don't have the comic in front of me and I don't remember it, you know, exactly, I'm thinking like, okay, that was a two panel, you know, scene. And then that was like 3 or 4 panels or something. And that's a couple pages. It's just kind of interesting that way. And the other thing that sort of it works or it doesn't work in certain situations is it uses a lot of the Frank Miller internal monologue
right.
with Gordon. And it's interesting. This is a Batman movie. It's called Batman Year One. But like the comic, this is really a Jim Gordon story. And Bryan Cranston as Jim Gordon is billed first.
Yeah, no, this is a Gordon movie, yeah. And which is good. We'll talk about why, I think, in a minute. But the basic story, if you haven't read the book, is it opens with a 25-year-old Bruce Wayne returning to Gotham after 12 years abroad. It's a big sensation. At the same time, Lieutenant Gordon is coming to Gotham from Chicago to start his new job with the Gotham City Police Department. And then it traces their first year in Gotham, Bruce Wayne's journey from angry young man to Batman, and Gordon's journey from lieutenant to he ends up as captain at the end, and he's going to be on his road to be commissioner. And so that's basically the story. Is basically there's a mob element, there's Catwoman, there's crooked cops, there's a brief bit of Harvey Dent. I mean, it's pretty much a straight ahead story, the tale of two men's first year in a city that's awful,
yeah,
and how they're on the road to cleaning it up. That's pretty much the tale. There's not that involved.
Yeah, you know, no Joker, no, you know, Mr. Freeze, no Bane, no nothing like that. I mean, there's Catwoman.
Not even Two-Face. They
it's Harvey Dent. Yeah, it's not Two-Face yet. So
yeah, he's not in the book as Two-Face either. But as Paul said, it's mostly Gordon movie, which is great because Bryan Cranston plays a fantastic Jim Gordon.
So good. Like one of the best, I don't know, kind of kismet, kind of like the perfect casting that they've had, you know, in any of these. I think it was just an ingenious choice, and he does it really well. And he did it even a little bit differently than I expected. If you're used to sort of Heisenberg in Breaking Bad, you're not getting super intense Bryan Cranston. He's actually, I think he's a really good voice actor. Like a lot of guys come into this and they're just very gruff and very stiff. And I think that happens with some of the other actors in this. But Bryan Cranston himself, I think, came to it perfectly. And I would love to see him do something like this again.
And he also really made the voiceovers work.
Yeah.
Because the thing we learned in the Spirit movie a couple of years ago was that
that's a good comparison.
Was that when you speak Frank Miller's dialogue, it's really rough. It's a kind of dialogue that really works on the page, but it's really hard to hear. But and then you have that here too, because I pulled the book out in the middle of the movie, and a lot of the dialogue is just straight from the book.
Yeah,
and it can be rough with the wrong kind of actor doing it. And I think on the flip side of that, Ben McKenzie as Batman was, I thought, not good in the voiceovers.
No.
But I thought he was okay in the role itself. He went back and forth. At times I thought, oh, he's doing really well. And then at times I thought, oh, he's not doing well. So it was kind of a wash. But since he was really a supporting character, it didn't hurt the overall film because mostly it's all.
Yeah, I'm exactly on the same page. Is that he's not such a. I mean, it is a principal role, but it's not the main role. It doesn't really sabotage this movie. And the other thing is that he's a young Bruce Wayne. And, you know, Kevin Conroy wouldn't work in this role, really.
Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely not.
And there are moments here where he's kind of, you know, fucking up this whole situation and not being a great Batman. And it kind of works that he's, you know, a kid who's putting on this gruff voice and trying to do the Christian Bale thing and it not exactly working.
I found myself at the beginning not liking it, and then in the middle liking it, and then at the end there was a couple of rough bits. But
so,
yeah.
So one really quick, I said World's Finest earlier, and I meant Public Enemies. So don't comment that I don't know what I'm talking about with the movies. Two, going back for a second to the Jim Gordon voiceovers, he says some line about like how Gotham treats its cops or something like that. Had to do with like selling them like commodities, and my roommate actually overheard that line. He kind of chuckled. He's like, "Oh, that's a good line."
Right. I mean, the thing is that this is one of Frank Miller's best works, and this is a guy who's had a career of really great work. Even though the dialogue might be strange to hear at times in person, when it works, it really does work. It's very much hard boiled noir, which is what the element that he brought to Batman, which is he's been unable to shake for the last 25 years. But I really enjoyed this. I thought it was one of the better. And we haven't gotten to the art yet, which I thought was the animation, which I thought was spectacular. Yeah. But I thought overall this was not only really successful from what they set out to do, but just in terms of a movie, really, really enjoyable.
I was so impressed with the amount of restraint that the filmmakers had on this. And it's not just
absolutely. It's a drama.
Yeah, it's a drama, and there are long moments of, I mean, not silence necessarily. There are sound effects and like punching noises and stuff, but there's no dialogue for big stretches. Even though there is a lot of internal monologue, there's just, I mean, really well thought out choreographed fight scenes that have a lot of impact because there's not a lot of chatter in the background, and you can feel the weight behind every punch, and very just like real world kind of street level action stuff. And it's not, when you think, you know, Batman cartoon, like sometimes you think it's going to be off the wall and crazy, and this is just, it's really sort of minimalist and subtle in a lot of ways, where it could have gone a complete different direction.
Yeah, I probably winced more listening and hearing. I mean, the sound was a big part of it, but watching these fights, I definitely had more ooh than I usually do during one of these kind of movies. And
because of the realism brought to it, when Gordon gets beat down with the bats, it's really brutal They've established a very real world. It's not like Superman flies in, throws somebody through a wall, and they get up and punch each other. It's a very down to earth human movie. So when brutal things happen to people, you really feel that through this.
And like Paul said, it's shorter than some of the other animated films, but it doesn't feel rushed. It feels like it takes its time.
But also doesn't feel short.
No, it doesn't. But it almost, to go back to Bryan Cranston, it feels in a lot of ways like it takes a few pages from Breaking Bad in just how comfortable they are taking these long moments of quiet or just setting a scene really well instead of just rushing straight to a fight scene. And I almost, you know, found myself looking forward to the scenes after the fight scenes because I wanted to see more of the story and the characters interacting beyond just throwing a punch.
Yeah, you get a lot of those moments of, you know, Gordon sitting on his bed and, you know, what am I doing with my life, and his pregnant wife on a bed. And it's kind of, you know, honestly, if you've never read Batman Year One, first off, do that. But I can imagine there would probably be a lot of, you know, Batman fans who might maybe be put off by this if they're not used to this kind of story, because it isn't, you know, the Joker isn't in it, like we said, and it's a story where Batman is kind of ineffective, and he's green, he's new on the job, and Gordon is, you know, he's having an affair and is like just really doubting himself, but if you know the story and if you give it the opportunity and give it the chance, I think it's a really fantastic little movie. It's so weird seeing it in animation, honestly, I think.
It's funny because they really, I feel like they earned this. They're however many years into this movie, they've been successful for Warner Brothers. They've been profitable, so they get to do the Batman drama that involves child prostitutes, Commissioner Gordon having an extramarital affair, and all kinds of, you know, very adult themes, not in a sexy way, but in an adult way. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, I don't think they make this movie in the beginning. I think Warner Brothers probably doesn't let them. But now that they've got this track record, then they're going to do the sort of meat and potatoes movie next, that we'll talk about later. That they're like, we're going to do this really quiet Batman drama piece where Commissioner Gordon's the star and he has an affair with his coworker while his wife is pregnant. I mean, that's something I didn't think I'd ever see animated.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's integral to the story, and you know.
Sure, but it still doesn't.
I mean, oh no, no! I mean,
pretty shocking that they did it.
I was, uh, I, I, remembered in the back of my head seeing some of the featurettes and things like that saying that they were actually going to deal with the affair and the child prostitute and all that stuff. But I'd kind of forgotten about it by the time I sat down to watch this, so it felt pretty fresh. And my girlfriend, the same girlfriend who didn't like All-Star Superman, I didn't actually dump her. We were watching this, and she seemed to engage a lot more with this one. She was kind of like, oh, come on, Jim, like, don't kiss her. Why are you doing that? And you know, she saw Holly, and she was like, how old is that girl? I'm like, yeah, she's a child prostitute. Try to keep up.
She's as old as you want to be.
It's Taxi Driver, you know?
Yeah,
Even down to the sort of disguise he wears when he goes undercover.
So we should talk about the visuals, probably, and how close it matches the, I mean, they've said in the featurettes leading up to this that they were really, I mean, they were like religiously looking at this story and what David Mazzucchelli was doing, and even like, you know, the color palette and stuff.
It's very washed out and very muted color. Yeah. It looks fantastic. And when I pulled the book out there, if I had free time, I'd go through and take screenshots and then post them next to the panels, because they're, it seems like half the movie is just a straight up shot from the
book.
Which
is, I think, what they did in All-Star Superman too. I mean, they have a lot of, like, there's a lot of panels that are just shot for shot kind of things, but here it's, I think,
it looked like Mazzucchelli.
Just the atmosphere is just, it just harkened back to that book so much. And it, like, I think faithful without being too rigid to the story.
It wasn't slavish. Yeah, but it was.
It's not like when, I mean, if you're talking about Miller, I mean, it's not like the live action Sin City where it's like very sort of stagnant and like just static images and stuff. Like this moves and everything, and it's, there's a graceful movement to the movie, but it also, I mean, there's so many images that are ripped right from the book.
It's also like the opposite of Public Enemies and what was the other one? The other Ed McGuinness movie.
Public Enemies and the Supergirl one, Apocalypse. Right.
No, that was my...
Public Enemies... Where the art looked so much like McGuinness, it took away from things because the people were too big and too lumbering. When they moved, they looked weird. Yeah. Whereas this, the art really works in a motion. The art style works in motion. Mm-hmm. Didn't take away from it. I loved it. As a kid, this was a really important story for me. So in a lot of ways, these are the definitive looks for the characters for me. Like, this is the definitive Gordon, the definitive Bruce Wayne, who looks like Gregory Peck. And so to see it animated, I love to see, because I loved the very sort of really strong cheeks on Bruce, and I loved the wrinkles that Gordon had. It just all looked to me like, I feel like the characters should look at all
times.
And
I feel like they finally got a handle on how to do the CG cars, because a lot of times...
Yeah, it was much less obnoxious.
Yeah, a lot of times when they do vehicles with computer animation or computer graphics, I'm completely thrown for a loop because they look so bad. And it feels like for the first time they kind of are starting to get a handle on that, where I could still tell that they weren't traditional animation, but they didn't stick out like a sore thumb. And
I want to interview somebody there and find out why they do that.
Even as recently, I mean, they do it for spaceships, and you know that even in like the Justice League series or the Justice League movies, they did spaceships that way. Yes. Recently as the Batman, the Under the Red Hood feature, I think, if I remember correctly, they have like a car chase in there, and it's a CG car, and it's one of the most jarring things in otherwise a really good movie.
Yes. Remember the first time that happened? It appeared in one of these movies where we were all like, what the hell
is that?
It's got to be a reason. There's got to be a reason.
He did it in the early 90s Spider-Man cartoon a fair bit as well.
There's got to be a reason why that's more cost effective.
The artists don't like drawing cars or horses, and it's a good thing they don't have any horseback rides in this.
But if you're looking, I mean, if you haven't watched all these movies, but you're looking for some, you know, this is really quality. I'd put this in the top grouping of films. Absolutely. I don't know if I put it at the top because of McKenzie, but it's near the top. As a movie in the whole, it's very enjoyable. It's very interesting. It's very unlike the other movies we've seen. It's not a lot of these films, because they're so short, have been a lot of fighting. Because that's what people want. But this is much more character development. This is much more drama and angst, and just really, really, I was sort of floored by how good it was from top to bottom. But so I cannot recommend Batman Year One more.
The script is great, and not even just because the visuals are based on the Mazzucchelli drawings. I mean, but in terms of the animation really itself, it is really solid.
The fight scenes, when Catwoman attacks the house at the end, and it just really flows really well, and it's really brutal. Mm-hmm. And the sequence where the cops have Batman trapped in the house was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And the tenement, when they blow it up and then the bats come. It was really just stunningly well done animation-wise. Yep. But we also had a treat in this film. We had the brief return of the Showcase short. We didn't have the little intro at the comic store.
That's true, yeah.
I'm not going to call this a treat.
Well, it's a treat because they've gotten rid of them, so they're not doing them anymore, and it was nice while they lasted. But this was the Paul Dini-written Catwoman Showcase short, which took place in the same world as this one because it was the same design, same animation style, and Eliza Dushku was the voice, and Holly, her little sidekick, was in it, and it was the same voice actor.
Different costume for Catwoman, though.
Right, because she's
like later. You can say it's later on, you know.
It's later on in her career. She's got the Darwin Cook costume now. And it's, you know, pretty much she busts up some criminals, goes to a strip club, busts them up there, and then gets Holly some money to go out of town. Holly is kidnapped by traffickers.
Very similar to the recent, the Huntress number one, the Huntress miniseries. They have a freighter full of female prostitutes they're going to smuggle out of the country or something. And so, yeah, very similar to that. But it's some controversy leading up to the release of this, where they talk about how Catwoman is stripping and combine that with the Catwoman number one from the reboot. Kind of a hot button issue these days.
I actually laughed because I knew people that were upset about the Catwoman comic would be upset about the short, but also because I know from following Paul Dini's work, and we've been briefly working with him on iFanboy.com, that he's a dirty man. he likes you know, sexy stuff. He would, you know, whenever he gets a chance to do more adult stuff, there's always a bit of sex element to it. And so I was not surprised in the least that that's where the story went, because that's usually what, you know, he does when he can.
This was far from my favorite of the Showcase shorts, but I don't think the stripping aspect didn't bother me that much, because there was a method to her madness in that she was trying to get close to the crime boss. And of course it's, you know, it's kind of lowbrow and stuff, but I don't think it was that offensive, honestly. But I mean, it's not one that you
on the whole, I thought it was kind of dull.
Yeah, but I know. I was kind of bored.
Yeah. And it's not one that you want to show to your kids, like the Jonah Hex one, but right. I don't know.
At least nobody was motorboating.
This is true.
I mean, this is the one that I want to show to anybody. I just didn't like this. I thought this was really...
It wasn't the worst one.
I mean, I think I probably enjoyed it more than the Green Arrow one.
I don't know. I might put this below the Green Arrow one.
I think there's similar elements to this and the Green Arrow one in that there wasn't much story. I thought the really good ones, like Jonah Hex and like the Spectre, excelled at putting a plot in the midst of the action. This is actually pretty long. It was 15 minutes. Which is longer than
I mean, when you stack up all the beats to it, it doesn't feel like it would be 15 minutes. But I didn't.
No, it felt long, which is why I paused to see how long it was, and it was 15. It was 14, like 50.
A lot of
there.
It's just a chase scene,
right? But again, very well animated. It was
pretty interesting. I mean, I don't know if you can do that with a whip, but
there are a couple of things I don't know that you can do with a whip.
I mean, end, she sort of swings away like Spider-Man. She goes over like up on an overpass, like.
That woman's always done that.
She also like broke a wooden like back of a truck with the whip.
She did do that, yeah.
Yeah.
The only question I had was, could you sever a ship in half with a cable like that?
I had a lot of problems with the physics of this movie. Here's the thing. I thought
you had something metal at some point that wouldn't break because of the cable. Maybe it's a really shoddy
boat. Bruce Timm Studio plays it pretty fast and loose with physics when it comes to how objects like trees respond to being kicked or what actually happens when you get...
That's in the comics.
It was awkward, though.
What I'm trying to say is they play it fast and loose, and usually I'm okay with it, but there were a lot of pretty egregious things in this Catwoman short that took me far enough out of the story where I was kind of like, that's not plausible, and it's boring. I just didn't like this. This was not for me.
No, I think this is certainly boring. I think it was too long, and there wasn't enough story in it for the time, which is what happened. You know, yeah. I mean, it was good. I enjoyed parts of it, but you know, I wouldn't find myself watching it again necessarily. It was nice that they came back in theory. You know, like the idea that they're doing. I think they did it because either they had a deal previously, or Paul Dini was doing it. So there's like sort of a name value attached to it. But
yeah,
I don't think we're gonna see these anymore. From what they've said, they could always bring them back, change their mind, but I don't think they will. Also, in the extras, we had the first look, because we had the trailer released during the Comic-Con this week, but the featurette on Justice League Doom, which is the next animated film in the spring 2012. And what I mentioned earlier, it was the meat and potatoes one, because it's Justice League with all the original actors back that you know and love from the Justice League cartoon, with the addition of Nathan Fillion playing Hal Jordan. And it looks fun. It's a Tower of Babel storyline, which I liked. It was the...
So Mark Waid, right, in JLA?
Mark Waid, after Grant Morrison left the JLA back in the early 2000s, the story where Batman is revealed to have plans to defeat all the Justice League members, and it gets in the hands of the villains, so the villains use those plans to you know, rough everybody up, and it causes a lot of trust issues. If the trust falls at the end, they get
back. But it was a different, Justice League when he did. I mean, it was like the Kyle, I don't know. I mean, the Nathan Fillion. Right,
they're using Hal Jordan.
Yeah.
They swap in Kyle out for Hal Jordan. They swapped out somebody else. Somebody else is getting swapped out too. I forgot. Aquaman's not in it. And they're swapping him out for somebody else.
Was Martian Manhunter in the original?
Yes. Okay. I think Cyborg's actually been getting, Cyborg's in it instead of Aquaman.
Yeah, Cyborg is in it.
So it's sort of the
that's true.
Taking the current Justice League in the comic lineup and putting them into this old story. But it looks fun. It was, what I found fascinating about the featurette was they had a whole thing about the cast, because they brought the original cast back together, and they interviewed everybody except for Kevin Conroy, who I think I've never seen actually interviewed for any of these things.
He was in a weird featurette on one of them where they went to dinner.
Yeah, but he never actually...
Do you remember the talking head?
They don't do talking heads with him, and also you never see him doing the voice in the studio.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of interesting.
I mean, Tim Daly, they showed Michael Rosenbaum, they showed Nathan Fillion, they showed Susan Eisenberg, they showed Carl Lumbly. I mean, they literally had everybody. Right. But
they played his voice a lot throughout the thing.
Right,
so there's a presence, but yeah, they never show him doing the actual voice recording. That's kind of interesting.
But it looks fun. I mean,
Tim Daly has cool glasses.
Tim Daly doesn't age.
He doesn't.
There's somewhere, there's a painting of Tim Daly, and it's aging rapidly.
Maybe they don't show Kevin Conroy in the studio because he actually dresses up like Batman, and they don't want that out there.
I saw him he did show up at the screening for the last Justice League movie in New York that I went to, and nothing seemed to be wrong with
him.
He did do the voice, yes. Who knows? But it looks fun. They're adding in the Legion of Doom, so they put in Vandal Savage instead of Ra's al Ghul, and they're sort of combining some, because it's a short story too. So they added some more elements. It looks like, but it looks like it'll be fun.
Mirror Master in there, Star Sapphire, the weird Martian guy.
Yeah,
I don't know what that's all about. That's kind of
Bane. I think it'll be good. I always like, you know, I'm not beholden to the old cast. Everyone freaks out when it's not them, but I do like hearing them. I do like hearing other actors play these too. But I do like, you know, it's fun to see the old cast get back together.
It's a good and Nathan Fillion is, I think, a good addition. I think he's a really good Hal Jordan.
He's a great Hal Jordan. although he was a little bizarre in the interview, dude. It was like he went off with some weird metaphor.
He was the guy you can see the smile when I was like, it was a little weird. But
it'll be good. It'll be fun, I think. And then I think after that, I think the next one is Dark Knight Returns, if I recall correctly.
Oh, there you go.
That'll be interesting. That's way more problematic than I think year one, because year one's short enough and it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Dark Knight Returns is, are we going to see topless Nazi woman?
Dark Knight Return also has a lot of kind of that media integration with a lot of talking heads, punditry type things. It'll be interesting to see how they do that, because I can
see the attack. We're going to have a feeble Ronald Reagan at the helm of the,
be bold.
It's going to be really interesting. That's the one. If you probably take all these,
we know they can do it visually because they've done it before.
Yes,
they've done Frank Miller visually before.
It was in the animated series.
It was like an anthology episode.
Yeah. I remember Legends of the Dark Knight.
Yeah,
I lost my shit when that happened. I was probably like 13.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, what's going on?
I saw that before I'd read Dark Knight Returns or really any Frank Miller, so I didn't understand what they were doing. I just thought
why is Batman like
fighting a mutant?
My parents were neglectful. I had that book when I was like eight. I had a Dark Knight Returns poster in my bedroom my entire childhood. I mean, that was like, for me, that was the seminal Dark Knight Batman story. So.
Do we know who's doing the voices for that one yet?
Well, I don't think we know anything about it. You can almost have Kevin Conroy at this point. He's about that right age, but he's...
I was wondering for Superman, really.
We won't have Mark Hamill for the Joker, though, because he's not doing him anymore.
Right.
Well, it's not the same Joker, right? Spoilers, but...
No, it's the Joker.
I'm thinking Dark Knight Strikes Again. What am I thinking?
Don't talk about that one. I'm holding out hope for Clint Eastwood. I've got fingers
as
crossed.
As the Joker?
No, as Batman. Yeah,
you could,
Joker.
Well, you could have the Rango spoilers, but you'd have Timothy Oliphant come in and do the Clint Eastwood voice, because he's done that before, professional.
That could work too. Anyway, that'll be the end of next year, assuming it happens. I'll believe it when I actually see a trailer for it. So we'll be back in the spring of 2012 for Justice League Doom, assuming the world doesn't end.
Doom.
I don't think the world, you know, like 2 days from now the world's going to end.
But, well, in 2012. Oh, that joke doesn't do
it. But I mean, it's not going to end until December. I thought you were talking about Harold camping in 2 days.
Is it the end of the year?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we're good.
Yeah, you got time until nothing happens.
By the way, that joke is not going to get old next year.
Yeah.
Just putting it out there now. All right, well, so if you want to talk about Batman Year One, you can go to iFanboy.com. There'll be a discussion place for this underneath the show. There'll be a little post for it. And you can check out all of our daily content that Paul and Ryan contribute to. And you can check out our weekly podcast where we talk about the week's books and the video show and all that fun stuff. So thanks for listening. And until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm Ryan. I did an animated thing this week.
That's right.
You did what?
I did an animated article this week.
Did you do the top five things?
Yeah.
Or things that DC should animate, yeah.
That's right. I thought you made a cartoon. Relevant, I was gonna be impressed.
Relevant content on the site to this discussion.
He made a little flip book in his notebook.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Took forever to post. Everybody's talking about the new town. Everybody's walking like the new town. There's a new kid.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.